It was at 8:13 a.m., August 6, 1945. Chaim Simon was on his way to work. He was walking down the street of the city, and he heard the rumble of airplanes coming in the distance. He stopped as the rumble of the planes grew louder and louder. Finally, he saw them. They were not his country's planes. But they didn't strike a whole lot of alarm in his heart, because these same planes, for the last few days, had been flying over, and they had been dropping leaflets and pamphlets out. And these leaflets and pamphlets, these leaflets and pamphlets that were being dropped for the last few days had been telling them that their country should soon surrender or there would be infinite destruction. And so he wasn't overly concerned again today as the planes came. The leaders of his country had assured them that it was just propaganda, that there really wasn't any imminent destruction. It is now 8:15. And as he looks up, he sees something strange, something that was different from the other days. For a great, big, huge black box has just fallen from the doors of an open airplane. And that great big box is coming slowly down through the air because it is suspended by great giant parachutes. He has never seen anything quite like that before, and he stops and he looks up at that great giant box, and as he watches it come closer and closer to his city, that was the last thing he ever saw. For at 8:15, his eyeballs were suddenly burned to a cinder, along with the rest of him. For at the spot where he stood, the temperature had instantly gone to 1 million degrees Fahrenheit. And he and 86,000 other people were fried to a cinder. The survivors, the unfortunate survivors, walked around that day waiting to die. They walked with their arms outstretched, that the seared flesh of their arms would not rest upon the seared flesh of their bodies. Truly, truly, hell had come to a city of man. Lot is sitting at the gate of Sodom. It was a gate that he set by every evening at this time. It is strange that a man like Lot should be living in the city of Sodom. In 2 Peter chapter 2, Lot is described as a just and a righteous man. Why is a just and righteous man living in a city like Sodom? For one reason, Sodom was a virtual paradise. The evenings were cool. The weather was just perfect. The air was fragrant with the year-round smell of fruit on the vine and flowers and trees and blossoms. For the people of Sodom, life provided a year-long festive season. It was so good. So, Lot sits in this beautiful land. He has come there, well, strange how he ended up there. He had become so rich that he and Abraham couldn't exist together anymore. Dear Uncle Abraham had allowed him to have any part of the land that he wanted. And, you know, I think sometimes we are very hard on Lot for choosing the beautiful valley of Sidon. We speak of how selfish he was. But Uncle Abraham never would have moved down there anyway. He knew that. Abraham didn't want to move down in that valley. And it was a decision that we're told Lot had not made by himself, that he had counseled with his wife, and there were so many cultural advantages to living in the, close to the city. They didn't move right into the city at first. They just moved down close to the city, you know, so they could get in and out. You know, there were so many advantages, things for the children, you know, educational benefits. There was recreation, and then there was a big new mall down there that had every possible store in it that you could possibly... I mean, the shopping advantages were just unbelievable. We're told that they moved into the city later. You know, they lived in the commute outside in the rural area for a while, but they found themselves commuting so much into the city that finally when an opportunity came to move into the city, it was just, you know, a natural thing to do. The children could walk to school then. It was just, you know. But Lot was vexed, we're told, by the filthy conversation and immoral actions of the people in the city. This is one of the reasons why he now sat at the gate in the evening. Lot had taken it upon himself to be the rescuer of unaware strangers that should come into the city at night, for Lot knew what happened to strangers that came into Sodom at night. It is a cool, pleasant evening. Lot is sitting there, and he sees two very handsome-looking men coming into the city. Not only are they handsome men, but they have a good, moral, pure look about them. And Lot steps up from his seated place and goes, and he offers them a place of rest and retirement for the night. He is horrified, literally horrified, when he hears them turn him down and say, "Oh, it's all right, it's a beautiful evening tonight, we'll just stay in the streets." It's quite obvious these men have no awareness of the character in which they are residing now. And so Lot insists. But as he does so, he has drawn attention to himself and to these men. And to try, I don't know why he tried to do it, but he tried to lead them to his house by not going by the most direct route, maybe hoping that some of the men that were sitting at the city gate might think that he was taking them somewhere else instead of home. But they knew what Lot was like, and they knew he was taking them home. And that night they came. They came with their vile, perverted, debauched characters and passions. And they wanted Lot to deliver those two men to him. But righteous, just Lot would not do it. And he went out before those people, and he tried to plead with them and reason with them, and they would have no reason, and they actually went to take Lot. And it's at this moment that the two guests that he has now taken into his home reveal their character to Lot. For the two angels that he has taken into his home now reach and bring Lot back into the house and strike the people in the city that had gathered around his house blind. Long I have pondered that statement about that verse that says that they were struck blind. For it must have been not a blind kind of blind. Because it says that they struggled to find Lot's door, but could not find it. And being frustrated with not being able to find the door of Lot's house, they went home. Now, that somehow strikes me that they were not, you know, blind. But they were blinded as to where the door of Lot's house was, some strange way. It seems to me if they had been made blind, that they would have been so terrified that they would not have continued to try and get Lot into Lot's house or could not have found their way home. They are spared. Lot is spared. And now the angels tell Lot why they are there. Lot, they say, in the morning, Sodom will be no more. Lot, in the morning, hell is going to come to Sodom. The Lord can no longer stand the perverseness that he sees in this place. You must gather your children and you must leave now. Lot can't believe what he hears. He's terrified and fascinated and he says, how long do we have? And they say, just till morning. It is now safe for Lot to move in the streets, for the crowd is gone. And he immediately goes out and he begins to knock on the door of his children. And he comes to his children and he says, listen, he says, there are two men in my house tonight. They say, yes, we know. And he says, they're angels. And they're going to destroy this city in the morning and we must go. You must come with us now. We must flee. And can't you see them coming over and putting their arm around him and saying, now, Dad. Dear old Dad, you just getting a little old, aren't you? There's nothing going to happen to this city. Now, Dad, you go home and get a good night's rest, and in the morning everything will be all right. And dear old Dad went out the door trembling. He couldn't believe it. Oh, if he could have moved his family back out of that city, but it was too late. And he went to the next house, into the next house, and he gets the same response at every home. Finally, returning home, he says to his wife, he says, they won't come. And by now, it is almost dawn. And the angels turn and they say, Lot, it's time to go. And Lot didn't want to go. Oh, I'm sure that maybe his fine house and all the accumulated wealth that he had through the years accumulated for himself might have had something to do with it. But I am suspicious in my mind that 99% of Lot's burden was not his money. It was those houses full of children in that city. And he lingers. And finally, because Lot is a righteous man, the angels take him by the hand and lead him out of that house. You know, I really feel sorry for Mrs. Lot. I really do. My heart breaks for her. It is true, she was told not to look back. But folks, her children were back there. Her babies. The ones who she had nurtured in her arms and cradled and loved them, they were back there in that city. My heart bleeds for her. We're told that if Lot himself had not lingered so that morning, she would have been spared. But because he had lingered, it had given her mental leeway also to linger. The two angels, we're told, that led them from the city, leave them just outside, and we're told that the Lord Jesus Christ himself, who had spent the night with Abraham, now comes and meets Lot, and he will take Lot a little farther away while those two angels return to Sodom and will do their work. Oh, what a work it is that they have to do. I doubt if the people that got up that morning in Sodom were aware that anything different was abreast that day. The sun had come up. The breezes blew in with the fragrance of flowers and blossoms. It was another beautiful day. But suddenly, in an instant of time, their eyeballs turned to cinders, and their bodies turned to cinders, and the temperature of the ground in Sodom turned to 1,000,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And hell had come to Sodom. And it was gone. And a great blaze, a ball of fire and smoke. And we're told that Abraham, sitting off in the mountains with his family and his flocks, who had pled so that for 10 the cities would be saved, Abraham saw the smoke. And how he must have fallen onto the ground and wept that there was not 10 in the city. And Lot had lost it all, except for the two daughters that go with him. And then later experience seems to indicate that even though they were saved physically, he had really lost them too. The only thing Lot brought out of Sodom was Lot. Really? It had been a slow, gradual process, that moving into the city, slowly becoming acclimated to the ways of the world. Lot himself had been able to maintain some of his righteousness, but not the rest of his family. Do you know one thing that would make me very happy? I would be very happy today if every one of you were in a Seventh-day Adventist church in Indianola, in Boone, Ames, Grinnell, Montezuma, Taman, Toledo, Independence. I wish that I could preach and talk each one of you into moving out of the city and moving into some of these beautiful little towns that we still have here in Iowa. Oh, you say, Pastor Bothwell, Des Moines, that's not one of the great cities in the United States. I mean, it's not like Chicago or New York. Oh, it's true, we're not that way in size. But we're that way morally here in Des Moines. Oh, if we would rescue our children by removing them from the influence of the city life. Oh, if we should rescue our children by controlling the television set that you would have even in the little towns in Iowa. I am not one who advocates throwing the television set out of the house. But I am one who advocates putting a very careful lock on it. And being extremely careful in what you allow your little ones to view. Or should I limit it to just the little ones? what we allow ourselves to view. How many of us who would be so horrified, we would never dream of going to a theater downtown. We'll just kick off our shoes in our living room and watch the very same thing there. How many of us are very carefully guarding the portals to our minds and our children's minds to keep the influences that would slowly destroy them out? John Bunyan, who wrote Pilgrim's Progress, wrote another classical Christian work called The Holy War. And the whole story of the Holy War is that there is a city by the name of Mansoul. And there is a great enemy trying to capture the city of Mansoul. And there is a great wall around Mansoul, but Mansoul only has a few gates through which it can be entered. Mansoul has an eye gate. It has an ear gate. It has a taste gate. There's a gate for each one of the senses. And it is very interesting that the enemy cannot get into Mansoul over the wall. The only way the enemy can get into Mansoul is through one of these gates. And it was another unique feature about Mansoul was that the gates were so constructed that the enemy could not force his way through. The only way that the enemy could get in a gate is if someone inside the city opened up one of the gates and left him in. And so in the story, someone opened up ear gate, and the great enemy Diabolus went in ear gate and conquered the city of Mansoul. Oh, there's quite a battle rages for Prince Emmanuel to be able to drive Diabolus back out of that city and reconquer it for himself. My friend, there is a great battle going on for you. A great battle with influences. The enemy is trying to get in your eye gate and in your ear gate and all kinds of ways to be able to conquer your Mansoul. But he can only get in if you open the doors and let him in. Lot was able to pretty much control his doors. But his children were not able to do that. And for the person who feels strong and says, I can handle it, you might be able to, my friend, though I doubt it. You might be able to, but what about your wife? What about those little ones? Are they capable of keeping their ear gate and their eye gates closed? Before the American planes bombed Hiroshima, they had dropped warnings from the airplanes telling the people to surrender or imminent destruction would come. The people chose not to believe the pamphlets, and imminent destruction came. Lot went to his children and said, imminent destruction is coming. They chose not to believe. And that morning, imminent destruction came. Our Bibles tell us that imminent destruction is coming again. And how many of us choose to believe that it will not? He who would not learn from history is an ignoramus. He who would not discern the signs of the times has an IQ problem. Jesus Christ is coming again. The warnings are given. The plea is out. Oh man. Give yourself totally and completely to the one, the only one who is able to save you. By His power and His grace that He is willing to give you now, seal off your ear gate and your eye gate from the influences of the world and for your children and your little ones. Imminent destruction again looms in the air. But how do we respond? Do we hear above it all the gentle Jesus who says, please come to me, I can help you. There is no safety, my friend, anymore, anywhere. We have no guarantee that at 12:05 this afternoon, the air in Des Moines might turn to 1,000,000 degrees Fahrenheit. I remember when I was a small boy in the 50s, everybody was very hydrogen bomb conscious in those days. We were building air raid shelters and, you know, putting up signs all over the place. It was 20 years ago. And I guess in 20 years' time, you sort of get calloused. And you sort of, in the back of your mind, say, well, we've made it for 20 years in the atomic age. We'll make it 20 more years. Huh. In an hour that ye think not, it could happen today. Have you ever thought of the fact that for some unknown reason, Des Moines might have been chosen by the enemy as the city that would be used to frighten the rest of America into submitting? It could happen to Des Moines. It could happen to Davenport. It could happen to Pittsburgh. It could happen to San Francisco. We don't know. And my purpose this morning is not to frighten you into making a decision for Jesus Christ. I don't want to do that. If you accept Jesus Christ out of fear, you've accepted Him out of the wrong motive completely. We must accept Jesus Christ out of love for who He is and what He is doing for us and what He will do for us. But I think that it behooves us every once in a while to face reality. And I am talking about reality this morning. I am not talking about fantasy. It behooves us this morning to have our lives in order. It behooves us this morning to establish a right relationship with Jesus Christ. So that if at 12:05 today it is all over, it's fine. If it isn't over for the next 40 years, it is still fine. The point is, we should have a constant, living, daily relationship with Jesus Christ when we know that it's fine, that it's all right. I want so badly to go to heaven. I really do. And I want so badly to be able to take my children and my wife with me. And I know you feel the same way. And therefore, this morning, as your pastor, I beseech you, I beg you, establish in your home the kind of home where angels will love to come and be. For the same angels that came to Lot will also feel free then to come to your house. I want them to come to mine. I love Jesus this morning because He does take the fear out of life. Men's hearts around us do fail them for fear. But I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid because no matter what happens, we're in the hollow of Jesus Christ's hand. Isn't it fantastic? Isn't it grand to know that we have an all-powerful, sufficient God who cares for us?
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.